One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Hey, Med Talkers. Welcome to the fourth episode of our new bonus series, Throwback Thursday, the history of modern day medicine, where every Thursday we retrace our forefathers' footsteps and learn how we've established our modern day practices in medicine. So I'm sure you've all had some experience with blood tests. Whether you're a junior doctor or medical student and have taken blood from countless patients, or you may be on the other end, nervously looking away as that seemingly life-threatening but ever so tiny needle makes its way through your skin. Have you ever wondered how we started taking blood in the first place? Where did this idea even come from? So the modern day term is phlebotomy, and the dictionary definition of phlebotomy is the act or practice of opening a vein for letting or drawing blood as a therapeutic or diagnostic measure. Now, phlebotomy, or venipuncture, was previously known as bloodletting, and this goes way back, hashtag throwback Thursday, to when Hippocrates was around in 500 BC. Egyptians believed that bloodletting would cure various diseases such as the plague, acne, cholera, cancer, and even cast out evil spirits. And bloodletting is exactly what it sounds like. It's a withdrawal of blood. And in ancient times, this was often done with a knife. So Hippocrates believed that there were four basic elements that related to four humours in the human body. Each of these humours was centred in a specific organ: earth, relating to blood and brain; air, to phlegm and lung; fire, to black bile and spleen; water, yellow bile and gallbladder. And if anyone was ill, it was believed that there was an imbalance of one of the four humours. The treatment was to remove some of the excessive humour through bloodletting, or removing blood. Another belief was being held in Greece, where a prominent Greek physician called Galen discovered that arteries as well as veins had blood within, inside them, where previously it was thought that arteries were merely filled with air. And it was commonly believed at the time that blood actually didn't circulate throughout the body, instead it just remained still in the extremities. And so it was believed that blood should be drained as close to the diseased area of the body as possible, because this was the diseased blood, and by draining out the blood, this would cure the disease. Bloodletting became more common throughout Europe because it was believed that by letting go of the blood would cause the disease to leave our systems, but in reality it was simply spreading infections to everybody else. And it wasn't just doctors who performed this procedure, it was priests, and also barbershops had bloodletting practices. So barbers took over because they were naturally skilled with sharp objects, and there were so-called barber surgeons who performed teeth extractions and amputations. Have you ever wondered why the barber sign involves red and white stripes? Well, the red stripes represents blood, and the white signifies bandages that were used to manage the bleeding. By the 1800s, the popularity of bloodletting was high, and in order to carry out the procedure, a physician would make an incision in the vein or an artery. And they also used something called cupping, which was a method of blistering the skin so that blood could be released from the blisters. Leeches were also used to retrieve blood, to suck up the blood, and they can suck up 10 times their body weight in blood. So, did it work? Did it have any benefit? So, it didn't cure anything for sure. But apparently there was some relief for patients with high blood pressure and also those who have hemochromatosis or high iron levels. Of course, with the benefit of hindsight, we know that releasing too much blood from the body can potentially be fatal. And there is one famous story from the first president of the USA, George Washington. He was the first president from 1789 to 1797, and he actually died from bloodletting. So he developed a throat infection, and it was thought that the best way to cure this was by releasing his blood. And this resulted in nearly 8 pints of his blood being drained. Modern scientists have speculated that Washington probably had a simple throat infection, but that having been bled several times weakened him and also depressed his immune system, making him more vulnerable to the fever that certainly eventually killed him. Slowly but surely, the tide was starting to turn, and the fatal drawbacks of bloodletting were being discovered. And in Paris, Dr. Pierre Louis, another physician who assessed the efficacy of bloodletting, so he examined the clinical course and the outcomes of 77 patients with acute pneumonia, and he compared the results in patients who were treated with bloodletting in the early phase versus the late phase of the illness. And in his conclusions, he didn't condemn bloodletting, but he concluded that the effect of the procedure was actually much less than had been commonly believed. And through subsequent studies, it confirmed the validity of these results, and then the use of bloodletting gradually diminished to a few conditions. Now, back then, scientists and physicians had the idea of using blood to treat conditions was completely wrong, but they did have the right idea that blood holds so many answers to patients' illnesses. And as a result, in modern day medicine, bloodletting is employed in a very different way, more to find the cause of the illness rather than using it as a form of treatment. But also, it's important to be aware that there are rare cases where blood is removed as part of treatment, such as those patients with high iron levels, so hemochromatosis. And today, in modern day medicine, phlebotomy, venipuncture, whatever you want to call it, has a completely different use. And where would we be without it? Where would diagnostic medicine be without blood tests? And more, there is a transition away from venipuncture, so puncturing a vein, towards finger prick sampling. And the benefits of these is that it doesn't require a medical practitioner to take the sample, which can lead to remote patient monitoring. So finger prick blood tests can be done by the patient themselves in their own homes, hygienically, with minimal pain, discomfort, and then these samples can be sent over to the labs and patients can be remotely monitored in these ways. And there you have it, guys. There is a story of phlebotomy. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please remember to leave us your feedback, and you can leave a comment on the Apple Podcast platform. We've got plenty more episodes in this series coming up, and you can check out all of our latest updates via our social media platforms such as Instagram and Facebook, just by searching MedTalks for more regular updates. Share the episodes with your friends, peers, and family who may also find them interesting, and keep listening. Thanks very much, guys, and see you in the next one. Goodbye.